The Guardian Football Weekly, sponsored by PES 2012, released October 14th for PS3 and Xbox 360.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, oh my, it's the Manchester Derby. Two Mancunian candidates with their sights set on the leadership. Given United's thrilling performance midweek and City's brilliant showing against Villarreal, a great match in prospect. Elsewhere, Chelsea put 5 past Genk, Fulham put 6 past QPR. What'll be the score as the Blues visit Loftus Road? Tight, we're guessing. That and the rest of the Premier League weekend rounded up like long-haired Dale Farm traveller types by our crack team of pundits. Elsewhere, John Ashton emerges blinking from his championship corner with tales of other leagues, tweets, posts and a special competition in this Football Weekly Extra. Hi everybody. James Horncastle joins us today.
That's me.
In person.
Yes.
Looking good, James.
Good. Yeah, I've had a shave.
All right then. Yeah. Excellent.
Not really.
Not really. John Ashdown, similarly unshaven.
Absolutely.
No
yes.
Time to shave. It's a Manchester derby.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
All my personal hygiene goes out the window ahead of, you know, 3 or 4 days ahead of the Manchester
three
derby.
3 or 4 days?
Yeah.
3 or 4 weeks, John.
It's true, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's pieces to be written, profiles to be compiled, all that kind of thing. Barry Glendinning, you're fresh from the cold face of Manchester Derby previewing.
I've been waxing my chest and under my arms ahead of the Manchester Derby, as I always do.
Oh, excellent. That's great news. All right, what's the single most exciting thing about this big, big game then?
It's difficult to know. There's so many exciting things about it. The Guardian is, I think, at the moment on part two of its four-part preview, which I suspect will be about back fours.
And is part two previewing the part three, and then part three previews the part four?
No, well, part one was Danny Taylor talking about comparing the goalkeepers.
Right.
They're both goalkeepers.
Yes.
They keep goal. Right. They're both young.
One's a bit better than the other?
Yes, or is he? We don't know. Right. I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
But the thing with these games is that they're, more often than not, you build yourself into a frenzy of such excitement that the game ends up being a bit of a damn squib. And on recent performances by both teams, there's every possibility this will be another damn squib.
I don't know about that. I think this is one fixture that often does live up to the billing. A 3-2 last year, that was very exciting. That famous cup game a couple of years back was absolutely astonishing with Michael Owen with the winner. James, you're nodding.
Stone Roses are back together, so yep. This could be the one.
Well, this could indeed be the one. I saw this mentioned.
Or will it be Fool's Gold?
Got nothing for you there. She bangs the drums of no relevance at all. I want to be adored. That's as far as I go with the back catalogue, really. Manny famously said the Stone Roses would never reform until Man City won the Champions League, and they're still alive in
the
Champions League. Yeah, just. How about that Villarreal game?
It was a good one, wasn't it? It was almost like it was the sort of game that I think that entire group is the sort of group that restores your faith somewhat in the whole group system in the Champions League, because they're four good teams. And it's going to be competitive probably all the way to the final game. I felt a bit sorry for Villarreal because I thought they played pretty well and deserved at least a point out of it. No, it was good. I don't know how much that sort of affects the weekend, because United had a slightly sort of, it wasn't an easier game in a way, but it was certainly less stressful for them, I think.
I think in terms of momentum, that was a huge last minute injury time winner, because if they'd gone into this Manchester derby with 2 points from 3 games in the Champions League, when you need 10 to qualify hypothetically, 4 looks a lot better.
But you're right, it certainly lifts morale and it gives them a real impetus, despite the worries that there might be about how they got themselves into that position. Of course, last time they faced Man United was in the Community Shield, and they got a bit of a footballing lesson.
Yeah, 2-0 up at half-time
from their neighbours. However, since then, they've added Nasri, they've added Aguero. And when you talk about the goalkeepers and which one might be better than the other, I do think, is Manchester United's back line and whole defensive unit a little bit more vulnerable than City's?
Well, it's certainly brittle, and they've had to change it so often that they haven't really had a chance to settle on their best back four. I presume we'll discover what Ferguson's first choice back four is on Sunday. Yeah, they are vulnerable, all right.
You see in a piece today by Danny Taylor on the goalkeepers how many shots that De Gea has saved.
Is it still the most in the Premier League?
Yes. He saved 18 in the box and 18 outside the box, whereas I think John's got the stats there. Hart has saved, 18 outside the box and only 8 in
15
the box.
And 8, so 23 in total.
That's been a big concern about United this season. They're conceding a lot of shots, partly perhaps because they're constantly changing their back four, and also their midfield composition is, you know, sometimes... I mean, he packed the midfield against Liverpool last week, but they seem to not be able to put teams on the back foot. I think that's partly because the guy who changed the game in the Charity Shield coming on in the second half was Tom Cleverley, and it's quite remarkable how they seem to really miss him already. I mean, we're talking in the summer about United needing to replace Scholes. Scholes, of course, who's been very influential in his fixture in recent memory, scoring a winner in one and getting sent off in the other. And yet Cleverley really sort of stepped up to the plate, and since he's been out of the team, they've been quite slow and plodding in midfield.
So. Interesting point. And collecting draws all over the place. So Dr. Nimish Mystery asks whether we think United will have an attacking lineup for Sunday's game, or will it be Phil Jones back in midfield?
On, say, going on last year's form and current form, the signs would point to a Manchester United win.
Because?
City failed to win away at any of the top seven last season. And United have won 24 of their last 25 home games in the Premier League. And City have only scored twice away from home at the top six last season. But that was City with the handbrake on.
Yeah.
And they've been playing differently this season. So it will be interesting. Hopefully they'll attack, and hopefully it'll be a good game.
You watched the Ortola Galati game, didn't you?
I did, yeah. And
had fun, I imagine.
Oh, it was excruciating, to be honest. And on the face of it, if you saw, oh, wow, two sendings off, two penalties, you'd think that must have been a good game, and it really, really wasn't. The atmosphere was dead.
There was nobody there.
There weren't many there. Well, it was Galati's average gate is 7,000, and the fact that this match was played 100 miles from Ottolil,
right,
which I think is called, would suggest, or meant that a lot of those 7,000 couldn't travel.
Right, unlike Manchester United, their fans aren't willing to make the extra.
Yeah, and the reason they couldn't play, I think they erected floodlights specially to be able to play UEFA Cup or Champions League games.
In their own ground?
In their own ground, but then UEFA stepped in and said because they didn't have enough five-star hotels or an airport in the locale, then
right,
it just wasn't good enough.
Right. Well, so. Fair enough. All right, well, watching Sundays, it is Sunday, isn't it, the Manchester Derby?
Yeah. Sunday at 1:30.
Wow, what a thing that would be, though, if City were to win this game. I mean, they're already gone top of the table, but if they were to win this game at Old Trafford, what a marker that would lay down. Would it lay down a marker?
I think it's a little bit too early in the season to say it's a title decider.
Well, I'm not saying it's a title decider.
It's a momentum shift.
It's a title marker layer down.
Yes.
Yeah. I think you were trying to imply it was a title decider.
No, I'm just saying that Manchester United have done what they needed to do so far. Or have they? Is it just they've been scraping through these last couple of fixtures? Have they been conserving their energy for the big one? Or are they actually about to get found out on Sunday, John? You're enigmatic for the last, aren't you? Buddha-like smile of knowledge.
Like you said, it's important in terms of the mentality of both teams. I think, in a way, particularly United more so than City, because I think City already consider themselves as genuine title contenders, and the most people do. But I think there's still an element of in the United psyche that sort of sees City as these sort of upstart, not quite to be taken seriously. And if they go there and win, then there'll be absolutely no doubt.
They'll take that and ram it right down their throat.
Absolutely, yeah.
But if you look past all the pom-pom waving and the razzmatazz, for either team, this is no more important a game than, say, a match against Wigan.
No, because it directly affects other people in the title race, doesn't it? It means a win for City is a loss for United, yep, whereas a City win at Wigan isn't necessarily a loss for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, it's this, you know, getting a scalp at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Which I think,
it's like laying a marker down, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Because I think I think this is the chance for City to lay down a marker. Oh, God.
All right. Well, moving on. Watching all of this with interest will be Chelsea, who have their own derby to consider, and it's a big one.
West London derby against QPR.
QPR. They don't like Chelsea.
No.
And they've made that very, very clear, haven't they, James?
It's true. From my personal experience, one of my good friends is a season ticket holder at QPR. And we used to go watch them in the Championship. And it didn't matter who they were facing. It was always, we hate Chelsea and we hate Chelsea. And I guess Chelsea, what's really interesting about them at the moment is they're almost sort of flying under the radar. People aren't really, their focus is on the Manchester clubs. because I guess you could say that City have kind of appropriated their identity as being this big free-spending juggernaut. And yet what Chelsea have been doing really is quite impressive. I mean, last night they scored 5 goals. I think they've scored 18 in their last 5 games. And they're really coming together.
Wow. And if Fulham can put 6 past QPR's bat line,
what can Chelsea do?
What can Chelsea do? Barry, what kind of overs and unders will you be betting on this?
I probably wouldn't bet on it.
No? Okay.
I you used up all my luck on Arsenal last night, betting on them. So my
how much? You had a big bet on Arsenal winning at Marseille, did you?
Yeah, which I'd given up for dead.
Yeah,
They were a decent price, like they were 5-2 again. So I thought it has to be worth a punt. You know how highly I regard our French brethren. So I'd given it up for dead, and then Aaron Ramsey stepped in at the death. So I owe him a drink if I ever see him. But yeah, you would expect Chelsea to hammer QPR. Although it's a derby and both teams will be up for it, there's something about West London derbies. They just, I don't know if it's because everyone around West London is too busy shopping around for the best hummus or what, but they don't seem to inspire much more than a shoulder shrug from anyone but the most fanatical fans involved.
Are you saying they're not proper football fans like they are in, say, the North West?
I'm not suggesting for a moment that they're not proper football fans, because I'd like to be able to walk the streets of London without having to watch my back all the time. having stuffed olives thrown, spat in my face. But they just don't seem to be as exciting or interesting as proper derbies.
I reckon there'll be more goals in this game than there will be at Old Trafford, but I might be wrong about that.
I think there's a bit of history between them, because the high point of this derby was in the 60s and 70s when Chelsea were... They won the FA Cup, the Cup Winners' Cup, and I think QPR won a cup then, or at least they finished second. And in 86, QPR, I think, beat Chelsea 6-0 when they were second in the league. So maybe that will happen. Who knows? In a parallel universe somewhere.
All right,
Neil
then.
Warnock.
Well, the one certain bet for this weekend is that Warnock will mention the fact that he turned down the Chelsea job back in the mid-90s when he was at Notts County. And he'll just drop that in somewhere, just right, so that everybody knows and remembers.
How different things could have turned out. How different things could have turned out. Well, you mentioned the Arsenal game there at the Stade Velodrome. A very curious match. A very curious sets of strips for both games. Again, half empty the stadium.
It just looked really weird. The stadium was half empty because it's been done up, and so there are no seats in quite about a third of it. And then the strips were weird. Seeing Arsenal playing blue was odd, and the Marseille strip was a bit weird looking.
I think that was designed by the fans.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, because they did launch an initiative in the summer to Adidas, like freed up the creative will of Marseille fans to, you know, just go crazy, because they always have a crazy kit. Like last year, they had, I think it was last year, they had the black kit, which had like a rainbow down the front, because they were trying to promote, I think, Marseille is a city of culture or something.
Oh, nice,
like, or a city of integration, immigration, etc.
Right.
So they're always a bit wacky like that.
Okay. Arsenal go top of the group because Dortmund were beaten again 3-1 at Olympiakos this time. Wonk says, "Dear ITV," and we're happy to pass this on, Wonk, "in what alternate reality is it acceptable to have Roy Chuffing Keane commentating on an Arsenal match? Seriously, had Adrian Charles curled up..." No, I can't read that. "Curled out a large jobby, dressed in a Spurs shirt, and interviewed that at halftime, it would have been marginally less offensive." Did you see Roy Chuffing Keane?
Well, what does Wonk want? He wants just craven, fawning... Well, I suppose, yeah, because that's what football fans are like.
Right, but was he particularly partisan, or what was the...
Not especially. I mean, they had... The thing about ITV is they have to take so many ad breaks that...
Right.
Pundits get very little time to speak, and they had three. They had Martin O'Neill, Roy Keane, and Gareth Southgate.
Right.
So it was sort of, they got 15 seconds each to say their piece. And the only thing I can remember Keane saying that was particularly Wonk would probably describe as anti-Arsenal was he had a right go at Andre Arshavin, but rightly so, because he was, once again, he was hopeless. Right. And if Philippe Auclair was here, I'd like to see would he be able to defend that performance again, because he was terrible, as was Theo Walcott. Apart from that, it was not a very good game, but quite absorbing, and it was interesting to see Arsenal just show some mettle for the first time this season.
Because Shelby was actually quite good.
He was excellent.
Quite calm, reassuring, which is not something that we're used to. He was very good.
Well, Arsene Wenger talking about the power of this victory to underline the progress that's being made by the Gunners. He was speaking during the week and saying about how half the team wanted to leave in the summer. It was a very candid remark.
Well, once again, I heard Philippe on News Talks off the Ball show the other night, and he said the reason that perhaps why Wenger was so candid was because he was talking to Bezente Lizarazu and in an interview on radio. And he also said that Arsenal have zero chance of winning the title, which I suppose is pretty obvious.
Wenger said that, yeah.
Yeah, so but that they're just going for fourth place. But Philippe said that you shouldn't read too much into the interview because it was more like two old mates share, you know, having a chat over a glass of wine.
That's exactly what you should read things into, I would have said. But there you go. Half the team wanted to leave. Most of them didn't. Some may subsequently go. Vermaelen signed a new deal. Arsenal have moved up to 10th place now. Heady stuff. They're doing almost as well as Norwich, actually. So that's a measure of their success. And they're taking on Stoke this weekend at the Emirates. Last time the two teams met, a Stoke win 3-1. John, is it crazy talk to suggest that the Potters could disrupt Arsenal's recovery in quite a serious fashion this weekend?
Not at all, no. Although they have got this UEFA Cup or Europa League tie, Stoke, tonight, Thursday. And I think I'm right in saying their record after European games hasn't
That's
been
true.
Great.
That is true.
They've been beaten by Swansea and hammered by Sunderland, which is certainly not great.
4-0 by Sunderland, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
So, I mean, and although it's only a couple of games, it's the sort of thing that you can read things into because if players or if the club just isn't used to that sort of travelling, and in fact, I don't know if they have to travel.
No, they don't. They're at home to Maccabi Tel Aviv.
Playing Thursday, it does. I mean, it's got to have an effect. If you're going into weekend games and you don't feel fully prepared for whatever reason, then it is going to affect your chances.
That aside, they're the kind of team that could really cause problems for an Arsenal side that really struggles against set pieces in particular.
There's always the temptation to sort of say, oh, Arsenal, very pretty side, Stoke, very physical side, therefore they must be the bogey team.
Right.
I'm not entirely sure that it'll come out like that.
Frigidy says, why the heck does Arsenal get so many minutes on the pod? Seriously. Got a dammering, innit?
It's because of our London-based pro-Arsenal bias.
Yeah. There's always weird stuff happening there. You know, it's not often you get a big team kind of tumbling over and exposing all their innards.
I saw Vermaelen having a pizza the other day.
Oh, right then.
Well, I don't know if it was a pizza. He was in a pizza restaurant.
Okay.
But he's
See, most people would say that and go, I wasn't sure if it was Vermaelen or not. Right. You were sure it was Vermaelen. weren't sure what he was eating.
Apparently he goes in there all the time.
Which pizza restaurant?
Pizza East.
I know Pizza East.
Yeah, but the one in Ladbroke Grove.
Oh, that's Pizza West then, isn't it?
Yes.
I didn't know they'd opened a new branch.
No, it's their second. I don't know why we're doing publicity for them, but it was very good, actually.
Oh, my God, free pizza. They're very good pizza.
Poor old Thomas Vermaelen will never be able to have lunch in peace again.
Yeah, indeed.
Damn it, I've shamed it, yeah.
Do you know what his toppings of choice were?
No, he was right across the...
What was your topping of choice, James?
I had a soft belly pork pizza, which you would not really think of going on a pizza, but it was very good.
John, what's your pizza of choice?
Got our anchovies.
All right, then.
Possibly a bit of gorgonzola.
You know
I live quite
do?
Close to Arsenal, which is why
yeah.
There's some good pizza eateries out there. They do. There's a brilliant place that does it in the quarter meter, not circles. They do like
pizza al taglio.
Mm.
Yeah, lovely. Barry,
I don't really like pizza, but if I had to eat one, I'd go for. I like anchovies as well, but I like hot, spicy stuff. So American hot.
I always like a bit.
Yourself?
It comes under many different names: basilico, primavera, that kind of thing. Basically, you're looking at fresh mozzarella, fresh tomatoes. And a bit of fresh rucola on there. So.
Did you ever like in Rome the pizza with potatoes?
Yeah, but especially Italia with the rosemary on top.
Yeah.
Oh,
that is
from that place in Fiorfiori in Via Vittoria. If you're in Rome, go to Via Vittoria, and it's Fiorfiori is the place. You get the little slabs of pizza. Oh! Let's take a moment for that. Part two in a second. Championship corner, John. Now, all sorts of things have been happening. A full round of championship action. And, of course, there was the big League One Sheffield derby last weekend, which we completely neglected to mention on Monday. Reese Cooper's got a question. What do you think of Steve Cotterill as a new Forest boss? How will he do this season now?
I think it's a perfectly sensible appointment. There seems to be quite a lot of surprise and sort of mystification. Why
are people surprised and why aren't you?
Well, I mean, he's done a very sort of reason. You know, he's not done anything spectacular at Portsmouth, but then he's had very sort of difficult circumstances there.
Aren't the circumstances difficult at Nottingham Forest as well?
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, he's coped at Portsmouth with more difficult circumstances. Right. You know, I mean, they're coming out of it now. His record before that was very good at Cheltenham, at Notts County, at Burnley. He did a decent job. I think he's a sort of safe pair of hands, and that's sort of what Forest need now when they've gone for these slightly more exotic choices like McLaren and things. They need to sort of settle it down a little bit.
Sheffield Derby?
Yeah. It was. I was there in the press box. I always volunteer to do them, but I sit there literally shaking because there's no release for the tension. It's awful. It's really quite pathetic in a way. Even though we were 2-0 up after 20 minutes and led for an hour, and it was 2-2 in the end, which was a fair result, really, if you sort of take it out of the tense derby situation. Wednesday looked like the sort of team that are going to do pretty well in League One this season. They're very Megson-like, to coin a phrase.
Yeah.
Well, they're just very direct, they're very physical. They put the ball in the box, and there is a way of doing that that's effective, and he can do it pretty well. And that's how they scored their two goals.
I think the main talking point of the Steel City Derby, though, was your mum being captured on camera, giving it the big V sign.
John, is this true?
Obscene finger gesturing shame.
There was a huge amount of finger yobbery at the game.
How did you know it was his mother?
No, it wasn't his mum.
Oh, right.
I was just sort of hoping it might have been.
All right, then. Anyway, 2-2 it finished. Meantime, back in the Championship, Southampton, big win for them over West Ham.
Yeah, they're 5 points clear now, to my surprise. I don't know if anybody else has been quite as shocked as I am, because I thought they'd do okay, but not particularly well. But them and Ricky Lambert is banging the goals in. I thought he was, you know, one of these slightly sort of lumbering lower league lumps, really. I was quite down on him sort of previously. A bit like Grant Holt at Norwich. But they both exceeded expectations and scored goals in the Championship.
The identikit Championship scorer, someone who's big, chunky.
Well, I sort of see that as almost like a league below, like a League One sort of type of striker, really effective in, you know, bullying defenders and having a decent, you know, decent touch for a fat lad.
Fascinating. Okay, anything else about the Championship we should know? Anyone in down at the wrong end in trouble who shouldn't be?
Well, I don't know if it shouldn't be. Bristol City have appointed their rock bottom. They've appointed their new manager, Derek McInnes, from St Johnston this week, which is an intriguing appointment. It'll be quite interesting to see what goes on there, because they're in big trouble.
Bottom of the table. Now, what about Italy? James Horncastle. All sorts of things to talk about here. We'll squeeze one or two of them in. First off, in Man City's group, Napoli managing to get a point against Bayern. Extraordinary match, this. They didn't have a single shot on goal, and yet they did actually manage a 1-1 draw with the German juggernauts, who look particularly impressive this year, don't they? Woof.
Yeah, they really did. They cut through Napoli's middle very, very easily. And
but efficiently, I like to think.
Efficiently.
Yeah.
But, they were vastly superior, and Napoli survived. And it's to their credit, really, because I think a lot was made of how the crowd were really the 12th man in this fixture and helped get them over the line. But at the same time, Napoli are formidable at San Paolo, I think, even in Europe, because since 2008, they haven't conceded a goal there. So,
well, they have now, of course.
They have now, yeah. But De Sanctis continued his
good form. Well, Bayern hadn't conceded a goal in the Champions League, and that own goal sort of. Did you know that Napoli have only had 4 shots on target in the Champions League?
Very efficient.
Yeah, they've scored with 3 of them.
Yeah.
And an own goal. There you go. It's amazing, isn't it?
The big thing about in the papers this morning is the Italians are getting all kind of pleased with themselves because their teams have won 5 out of 9 games in the Champions League.
They've got the best coefficient of all the nations.
Yeah. And it's quite a funny contrast because obviously Milan and Inter are both really struggling in domestically, and yet they're doing really well in the Champions League. With Inter beat Lille away from home. Pazzini scored. Whenever he scores, they win. Mm-hmm. I think in the 8 games he's done that. Ranieri's calling himself the pharmacist now.
Why?
Because he thinks mixing all these best players together means he's kind of... I think alchemist was the sort of name that he wanted to go for.
Oh, but he went for pharmacist.
Pharmacist, yeah.
Oh, Freudian slip there, perhaps, eh? Milan, their victory over Bati Borisov was only their third win in 11. in Europe.
Great goal from Boateng, though.
Pwah!
Who smashed it in off the bar from outside the box.
Killed a... It was a looping pass, wasn't it?
Yeah, stone dead.
Yeah.
And celebrated as sort of, you know, pointed a finger at everyone because he's been criticised for having too... presumably having too many nights out clubbing during the moonwalk.
Filippo Maria Ricci, remember him? He quotes from Rocco Siffredi.
Ooh.
Who I've never heard of,
no.
But turns up in today's Gazzetta dello Sport and says only two players could be good porn actors, Totti and Cassano. They could do it even in front of their relatives. This is a strange pair to choose. I don't know if I would ever willingly see Cassano do it in front of anybody, whether it's his relatives.
For a donut, he would.
Rocco Siffredi. Come on, Barry Glendening.
You would have caught him on Eurotrash, presumably.
Rocco Siffredi. Come on, Barry.
So I've led a very sheltered life.
Yeah. The things you showed me in Vienna. Yeah. He's probably more the tame end of the market for you. Giancarlo Rinaldi, who you're familiar with, says, after the Serie A's weekend scores, or indeed lack of them, what's the best 0-0 you've ever seen? There's a question for us all, eh?
Italy-Holland.
Yes.
Euro 2000.
Yes.
That was excellent.
Mm. There was a Valencia Inter as well of the same category, actually. But the Italy Holland was the better one, yeah.
Yeah, because you knew what you were getting. They were just going to play to go to penalties. That's brilliant.
All right, then. And Del Piero's been chucked out.
Yeah, shocking, really.
Well, it's not shocking, because he did say this was probably going to be his last year, but it was a bizarre bit of handling by the club.
Yeah, the Gazzetta likened it to breaking up with a girlfriend of 20 years by text message.
Mm.
Because Del Piero signed a one-year rolling extension last year on his current deal, and they said at the time that it would be his last contract. But Juventus' president, Andrea Agnelli, came out at a shareholders' meeting on Tuesday and basically said, yeah, I'd like to thank Del Piero. This is his last year at the club.
What's the problem with that?
Well, the thing is, why do it in October? You know, why when he's got 8 months still to the season still to play? Why do it? Because it could demotivate him.
Mm.
Yeah, and why not make a show of it at the end of the season? Now, Agnelli's sort of line coming out of that was, well, it was a shareholders' assembly. We don't all get together that much, so it was an opportunity to thank him in front of all the people who mean something to Juventus, including Bonnie Perti, who was the president and the Juventus legend who signed his contract, gave him his first contract. But even so, the justification of doing it on any old day, on a cold and wintry October,
yeah,
you know, it's just a bit of a snub, a bit of a lack of respect.
20 years he's been there.
Yeah.
You can't imagine sort of Roma doing that to Totti or anything, could you?
No.
I suppose they're not in the... Why is Totti in a slightly separate league to the way that Del Piero is in?
Yeah, I think it's something to do with Juventus, the popular perception of Juventus as being big and bad.
I think also Juve are an incredibly strongly organised club that even when they had lost basically their entire management structure, that was probably their one weak point and the point at which they were most hanging on to Del Piero. But he's always been a big player but within a big club, whereas Roma have really used him in many ways as a almost like a shield against the fans, Totti, on many occasions. As such, he has an incredible power over the club.
Yeah, I think and also the sort of the issue here is with Agnelli, because he's meant to signify this Juventus style, which they make a big point of as doing things really classily, and this was just not class at all, and it was a big disappointment in that respect, because since he came back to be a president last year, he's been very clear on reinforcing this Agnelli line to doing things professionally, doing things well, and sort of distancing himself from the past.
Mm. Fascinating stuff. A couple of posts. Oh, actually, can we mention the Asian Champions League match between Al Sadd and Suwon Blue Wings? Play halted for 10 minutes, three players sent off. Did you see this?
Yeah.
Basically, it was a Korean player. It was one of the Blue Wings who went down, and they didn't realise that play had restarted. Al Sadd basically quickly restarted play and put the ball back towards the Korean keeper. But Niang just ran through, took it past the keeper and scored. And then all hell broke loose. And there's a fascinating little roundup of this on Eurosport. The commentator then concludes with the words, "Well, sad scenes." Yeah.
Because anyway, no one likes to see
nobody.
Scenes like that ever.
No. So. All right, then. Let's see. Colin Watkins has more Bebeto cradle news, because, you know, the kid who was being celebrated the arrival of has now signed as a professional footballer. The third rocker in that, you know, that 94 World Cup trio. Is father to Barcelona midfielder Thiago Alcantara.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did know that, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Bears, John Ashton, you obviously haven't been following this. What to do if you're confronted with a bear in a forest or indeed anywhere. I think this advice would hold up pretty much in any locale. Matt Petrie takes issue with this notion that bear defence might involve running downhill because their front paws are shorter, so they would just tumble over their heads. He suggests that the problem with that is that if he tumbles down the hill, the bear, then he's going to be waiting for you at the bottom, so you then have to run back up. Because his front paws are shorter, he's going to go faster than you uphill. Sklun Stew possibly puts the whole thing to bed. As a genuine Canadian lumberjack, he says, might be a 13-year-old girl in Wolfenstein, I don't know. But anyway, he says, as a genuine Canadian lumberjack, it's about time I pipe in with some more bear-tastic goodness. Basically, he says, the first thing about bears is they stink, so if you smell rubbish, either get cleaner friends or start backing up in the opposite direction. I'd also recommend developing excellent aim with projectiles of a decent weight, say a water bottle. A dead-eye shot right onto a bear snout from about 10 yards was enough to send one scurrying the other way during an encounter. There you go. Love the pod, says Sklun Stew out there in the Canadian wilderness. Please keep fleshing out Barry's homoerotic qualities.
All actually, right, I'd like to retract on the subject of my homoeroticism. I'd like to retract my man love for David Hay. Well, right. He's very. Thinking about it, I think Les Ferdinand is probably the most handsome footballer ever.
Join the queue.
Or Jason Roberts, indeed.
Really?
Very, very handsome.
There you go.
I think I've said that before on the pod, actually.
Yeah, and in your sleep. Okay, let's try and dial up Sidlow after this. Sidlow in Spain. Sid, favourite pizza topping?
Basil.
Just basil, that's it?
Yeah. If you have a really, really good pizza,
yeah,
as in like the ingredients are good. And
you're talking about a margarita with the tomato and mozzarella?
Exactly. I'm talking about Pizza Ray in Rome, James. If you have a really good pizza, shout. It's the basil that actually makes all the difference.
Right.
What about your base?
Are you thin and crusty?
I've been called many things, James. Finn's not normally one of them.
All right, then. That was a big win for Real Madrid, wasn't it, against Lyon?
Yeah, it was. And I think not least because of the way that it happened. They were really genuinely very impressive, Madrid, and completely tore Lyon apart. And also because it puts them in a position now where, I mean, I don't think in truth anyone was ever in doubt, but where they now will win the group. And they'll almost certainly win it with a couple of games to spare, which means, of course, they can then rest and they can make sure they haven't got players suspended and injured for the next few phases. They can concentrate on the league for a little bit as well. And I think that's the most positive thing, because I don't think from the start that we ever doubted they'd get through, but it's the way they've done it that's impressive.
Barcelona rolling along in the meantime. And what's coming up at the weekend for the pair of them? And indeed Levante up there at the top of the table.
Yeah, it's a really good weekend of games. I'm glad you said Levante, because they're one of the reasons why it's an interesting weekend. You've got Real Madrid go to Malaga, of course, with everything that Malaga means these days, of the money that's been invested, the quality of the team that they've got. Barcelona play at home against Sevilla, who are still unbeaten this season, and I think I'm right in saying a fourth. And Levante, who are second, incredibly, and level with Barcelona in points at the top, they play Villarreal, which of course is sort of a derby, as they're both down there on the east coast in the Comunidad.
Was Tuesday's performance there at the Etihad Stadium, was that signs of a life stirring once again within the yellow submarine?
A little bit, yeah. I thought they played really, really well, and the problem is that emotionally, I think it was probably pretty bad news for them because of the way that they lost it. And the interview post-game on Spanish TV with Giuseppe Rossi was really telling, and it was really eloquent, partly because he wasn't. And he just stood there sort of staring into middle distance, was absolutely shell-shocked. And the questions, you know, they kept on trying to push him for more, and he was just sort of standing there going, I don't understand how that could have happened.
There's a role for him on this podcast, I think.
So you do wonder what kind of impact that would have had, but it was certainly in terms of the way they played, it's probably the best they've been this season, because they really haven't had a good season so far, Villarreal.
Well, all right then, excellent, Sid. Anything else we should know about Spain?
Well, there's the ongoing debate between Higuain and Benzema, which has left Marca today to do a front cover, which is a merging of the two faces to say that together, if they were one man, they'd be the perfect striker. And the picture is really quite disturbing.
And that's what their kids would look like as well, isn't it?
Yeah, well, assuming that they could have kids, I'm not sure which one would actually bear the child, but there you go. It's a really quite disturbing picture. And there's another story just about to break, because it's breaking in Denmark, and I don't yet know enough of the details, but there's an accusation in a Danish newspaper of Mallorca paying a journalist basically to badmouth Michael Laudrup In other words, the club was trying to screw their own manager from the start. Now, obviously, we're still waiting to see, and I should probably chuck in a few million allegedly at this point.
Yeah.
But it threatens to be a really big story, that one.
Sid, many thanks for that. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll catch up with you afterwards.
Cheerio.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Now, if you would like to go to Spain, then have a listen to this. To celebrate the release of Pro Evolution Soccer 2012 on the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, Konami have given us a very special prize indeed, a chance for one lucky Football Weekly listener to take themselves and a friend to Madrid to see Real at the Bernabeu. You get flights and accommodation included, plus a couple of copies of PES 2012 as well. To enter, you have to answer this question, set by our very own John Ashton. Which international title did Real Madrid win in 1952 and 56, becoming and remaining the only European side to win the tournament twice? Details and a link to the entry form are on the Football Weekly webpage. The competition closes next Wednesday, the 26th of October.
I'm sure Sid will take whoever wins the competition. He'll take them out for drinks as well.
Or a pizza.
And a pizza.
Yeah.
Basil pizza.
A Basil pizza.
That's a very difficult question. Are the questions for competitions like that not supposed to be like, who plays at the Bernabeu? Is it A, Crystal Palace, B,
on ITV,
the England rugby team, or C, Real Madrid?
Yeah, it's a big prize, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a select band of listeners, isn't it? Football Weekly listeners, they like a challenge. Anyway, now back to the Premier League weekend. Many games of great interest, which we haven't mentioned yet. Among them, Barry, Wolves-Swansea, which you're getting all excited about.
I am. I'm all a quiver. It's just Swansea haven't got a point away from home yet in their first campaign in the top flight for many a year. And Wolves have lost five on the bounce. So it's a big opportunity for one of them to get their sort of re-kickstart their season,
right?
Which probably means it'll be a nailed-on draw.
Ah, all right then. Aston Villa taking on West Brom. It's yet another of those West Midlands derbies. Bolton Sunderland, how big a game is this? Bolton managed to get themselves off the bottom of the table last weekend, but they're still third last, but only goal difference separates them from slumping Sunderland. Agent Bruce in all sorts of trouble there. Sunderland away at Bolton, I'm just saying.
It's massive.
Yep.
It's one of those guys that it'll really lay down a marker, I reckon, for the rest of the season.
No, well, I tell you what, if the Sunderland lose that, you know, it may not be a marker that's getting laid down. Or laid off, perhaps. Said working words brilliantly.
Well, Bolton have had, obviously, a tough start to the season. They've played six of the top ten so far. So this is the first of a run of comparatively easy games. They've Arsenal away after this, but then it's Swansea, Stoke, West Brom, Everton, Spurs, Villa, which you'd say are all quite winnable.
Yeah.
And Sunderland, they're both awful. I mean, you can sort of put lipstick on it, but it's still a pig of a match.
Okay. Newcastle taking on Wigan. Newcastle, who, of course, survived last week's visit of Spurs, still fourth in the table, and you'd expect them to continue there, perhaps, with the visit of Wigan. Liverpool, who are fifth, if memory serves, they host Norwich. And again, Norwich have impressed everyone, haven't they? You know, do you think they could maybe pull an upset there at Anfield?
They'll certainly go and give them a game.
Yep.
They were unlucky at Old Trafford when they went there a few weeks ago.
What? What?
What else would they do?
There are some teams who would go and just kind of, you know, shut up shop or whatever, but Norwich are a very protective side.
They'll have a go. They'll have a go winning the football match that they're playing.
Excellent. On Sunday, Fulham host Everton. Goals ahoy there. Velios, perhaps. Yeah. Who knows how many he can... He got one goal after 8 seconds. How many can he get in a whole 90 minutes? That's the question. And Blackburn take on Tottenham. Neil Wallace repeatedly tweeting in this morning, saying, why is nothing being done at Blackburn when the solution's so obvious? As in, the squad isn't at all terrible, suggests Neil Wallace. Management clearly is. In spite of his Panglossian optimism, Keane is entirely clueless.
I saw that tweet and meant to look up the word Panglossian, because I didn't know what it means, and I still don't, so I'm hoping one of you does.
The Panglossian issue aside, what about his point? Is the squad not terrible on the management
team? Well, I was going to say, I don't know if I buy the fact that it's not, I mean, it's not a brilliant squad, but I think it's probably one of the weakest squads, well, one of the sort of six or seven weakest squads in the league, and they need to finish towards the top of those six or seven to stay in the Premier League.
And what is the obvious solution that Neil Wallace is referring to? Is there anything clear that needs to be done at Rovers?
Well, presumably he's referring to getting rid of Steve Keane and bringing in a different manager.
But has he made appalling decisions thus far?
I think he's struggling to win over fans because of the way he came in, I think, linked to the whole sort of Wenger's takeover, the fact that Big Sam was Big Sam at the time, yeah, wasn't it? Left without, you know, having done a decent job.
Who he was the assistant to.
Yeah, exactly. So I think...
Was there a suggestion at the time that he might have undermined Big Sam from sort of scheming, plotting and scheming in a Machiavellian fashion behind his back?
Well, there's talk of an agent being involved somewhere.
Well, the agent, whose son was then hired by the football club and who hasn't played a single minute of a match yet.
But essentially, he's from that starting point, he's been battling to win over fans and he's just not been able to do it yet.
Right. All right. Panglossian, by the way, as we all know, is a reference to Dr. Pangloss in Candide by Voltaire. Dr. Pangloss is naively optimistic.
I'm very impressed by the manner in which you're able to talk and listen to producer
Pascal at the same time. Because there's nothing in between. It just comes in and goes out. Just on that match, though, Spurs, they're coming up for a Europa League game. And
everyone's doing Pilates, apparently.
What?
Well, there's an entire team out, A, because he likes to play his youngsters in the Europa League, he being Harry.
Yep.
But apparently, with injuries, etc., people like Friedel are doing Pilates. Apparently, Harry was shown how to do a Pilates move.
All right.
And it gave him sciatica. He was out for 3 weeks.
Right, okay.
Out being a manager.
Marvellous. Potential for an upset there, perhaps. Pilates notwithstanding. One final thought for us today. Taunts. Anyone else think these foreign owners, in inverted commas, who want to do away with relegation are actually just the Venkies?
Well, I'd imagine some of the American owners would like to do away with it as well, because it's not really a concept they're familiar with. But they're in charge of clubs that aren't in much danger of being relegated, most of them, apart from Ellis Short at Sunderland, who are looking increasingly likely for the drop. But let's not forget that the first two people to suggest doing away with relegation were the owner of Bolton, Phil Gartside, and Gary Cook, formerly chief executive of Manchester City, and they're both very English indeed.
Indeed so. On that note, that's where we come to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra. Many thanks to Barry Glendening, to John Ashton, and to James Horncastle for being with us. Sid Lowe on the phone from Spain, guest producer Pascal. And we'll be back on Monday after a tip-top weekend of football. Hopefully you'll be joining us for that. I'll have a European paper review available on the Guardian website from Friday, also available on iTunes. Otherwise, have a super footballing weekend, or whatever you choose to do with it, and we'll catch up with you again on Monday.
The Guardian Football Weekly, sponsored by PES 2012. Forever evolving, forever football, forever Pro Evo.